One October day in 1917, said Jordan Baker, sitting up very straight in the tea garden at the Plaza Hotel, I was walking along from one place to another, half on the sidewalks and half on the lawns. The largest of the lawns belonged to Daisy Fay's house. She was just 18, 2 years older than me, and by far the most popular of all the young girls in Louisville. That morning, her white roadster was beside the curb, and she was sitting in it with a lieutenant I'd never seen before. They were so engrossed in each other that she didn't see me until I was 5 feet away. "Hello, Jordan," she called. "Please come here." She asked me if I was going to the Red Cross to make bandages. I was. Well, then, would I tell them that she couldn't come that day? The officer looked at Daisy while she was speaking in a way that every young girl wants to be looked at sometime. His name was Jay Gatsby. Daisy had a debut after the armistice, and in June she married Tom Buchanan of Chicago, with more pomp and circumstance than Louisville ever knew before. He came down with 100 people in 4 private cars and hired a whole floor of the Mulbach Hotel, and the day before the wedding he gave her a string of pearls valued at $350,000. I was a bridesmaid. I came into her room half an hour before the bridal dinner and found her lying on her bed as drunk as a monkey. She had a bottle of Sauterne in one hand and a letter in the other. "Here, dearest." She groped around in a wastebasket she had with her on the bed and pulled out the string of pearls. "Take 'em downstairs and give 'em back to whoever they belong to. Tell 'em all Daisy's changed her mind." She began to cry. She cried and cried. I rushed out and found her mother's maid, and we locked the door and got her into a cold bath. But she wouldn't let go of the letter. She took it into the tub with her and squeezed it up in a wet ball until it came to pieces. She didn't say another word. We gave her spirits of ammonia and put ice on her forehead and hooked her back into the dress, and half an hour later, when we walked out of the room, the pearls were around her neck and the incident was over. Next day at 5 o'clock, she married Tom Buchanan and started off on a 3 month trip to the South Seas. I saw them in Santa Barbara when they came back, and I thought I'd never seen a girl so mad about her husband. It was touching to see them together. A week after I left Santa Barbara, Tom ran into a wagon on the Ventura Road one night. The girl who was with him got into the papers, too, because her arm was broken. She was one of the chambermaids in the Santa Barbara Hotel. The next April, Daisy had her little girl, and they went to France for a year. Then they came back to Chicago to settle down. Well, about 6 weeks ago, she heard the name Gatsby for the first time in years. It was when I asked you, do you remember, if you knew Gatsby and West Egg? After you'd gone home, she came into my room and said, "What Gatsby?" When I described him, she said in the strangest voice that it must be the man she used to know. It wasn't until then that I connected this Gatsby with the officer in her white car. When Jordan Baker had finished telling all this, we were driving in a Victoria through Central Park. "It was a strange coincidence," I said. "It wasn't a coincidence at all. Gatsby bought that house so that Daisy would be just across the bay." Then it hadn't been merely the stars to which he'd aspired on that June night. He came alive to me, delivered suddenly from the womb of his purposeless splendor. "He wants to know," continued Jordan, "if you'll invite Daisy to your house some afternoon and then let him come over." The modesty of the demand shook me. He had waited 5 years and bought a mansion where he dispensed starlight to casual moths so that he could come over some afternoon to a stranger's garden? I think he half expected her to wander into one of his parties some night, but she never did. It was dark now, and as we dipped under a little bridge, I put my arm around Jordan's golden shoulder and drew her toward me and asked her to dinner. Suddenly I wasn't thinking of Daisy and Gatsby anymore, but of this clean, hard, limited person who dealt in universal skepticism. "Does she want to see Gatsby?" I said. "She's not to know about it. You're just supposed to invite her to tea." We passed a barrier of dark trees, and I drew up the girl beside me. Her wan, scornful mouth smiled, so I drew her up again closer, this time to my face. When I came home to West Egg that night, I was afraid for a moment that my house was on fire. 2 o'clock, and the whole corner of the peninsula was blazing with light. Turning a corner, I saw it was Gatsby's house, lit from tower to cellar. At first I thought it was another party, but there wasn't a sound. As my taxi groaned away, I saw Gatsby walking across his lawn, looking at me with suppressed eagerness. I talked with Miss Baker, I said after a moment. I'm going to call up Daisy tomorrow and invite her over here to tea. Oh, that's all right, he said. I don't want to put you to any trouble. How about the day after tomorrow? He considered for a moment. I want to get the grass cut. We both looked down at the grass. There was a sharp line where my ragged lawn ended and the darker, well-kept expanse of his began. I suspected that he meant my grass. I called up Daisy from the office next morning and invited her to come to tea. Don't bring Tom, I warned her. Who's Tom? She asked. The day agreed upon was pouring rain. At 11 o'clock, a man in a raincoat, dragging a lawnmower, tapped at my front door and said that Mr. Gatsby had sent him over to cut my grass. At 2 o'clock, a greenhouse of flowers arrived from Gatsby's, with innumerable receptacles to contain it. An hour later, the front door opened nervously, and Gatsby, in a white flannel suit, silver shirt, and gold-colored tie, hurried in. He was pale, and there were dark signs of sleeplessness beneath his eyes. "Is everything all right?" he asked. "Have you got everything you need in the shape of tea?" I took him into the pantry, where he looked a little reproachfully at the Finn I'd recruited from West Egg Village. Together we scrutinized the 12 lemon cakes from the delicatessen shop. "Will they do?" I asked. Of course, they're fine. Old sport." The rain cooled about 3:30 to a damp mist. At 4:02 there was the sound of a motor turning into my lane. We both jumped up and I went out into the yard. Under the dripping bare lilac trees, a large open car was coming up the drive. It stopped. Daisy's face, tipped sideways beneath a 3-cornered lavender hat, looked out at me with an ecstatic smile. "Is this absolutely where you live, my dearest one?" Her hand was wet with glistening drops as I took it to help her from the car. "Are you in love with me?" she said low in my ear. "Or why did I have to come alone?" "That's the secret of Castle Rackrent." We went in. To my overwhelming surprise, the living room was deserted. She turned her head as there was a light, dignified knocking at the front door. I went out and opened it. Gatsby, pale as death, with his hands plunged like weights in his coat pockets, was standing in a puddle of water glaring tragically into my eyes. He stalked by me into the hall, turned sharply as if he were on a wire, and disappeared into the living room. For 30 seconds there wasn't a sound. Then I heard a sort of choking murmur and part of a laugh, followed by Daisy's voice. "I certainly am awfully glad to see you again." A pause. It endured horribly. I had nothing to do in the hall, so I went in. Gatsby, his hands still in his pockets, was reclining against the mantelpiece in a strained counterfeit of perfect ease. His head leaned so far back that it rested against the face of a defunct mantelpiece clock, and from this position his distraught eyes stared down at Daisy, who was sitting frightened but graceful on the edge of a stiff chair. "We've met before," muttered Gatsby. "We haven't met for many years," said Daisy. 5 years next November. The Finn brought tea in on a tray. Amid the welcome confusion of cups and cakes, a certain physical decency established itself. However, as calmness wasn't an end in itself, I made an excuse at the first possible moment and got to my feet. "Where are you going?" demanded Gatsby. "I'll be back." I walked out the back way and ran for a huge black knotted tree whose massed leaves made a fabric against the rain. After half an hour, the sun shone again, and I went in. After making every possible noise in the kitchen, short of pushing over the stove, but I don't believe they heard a sound. They were sitting at either end of the couch, looking at each other as if some question had been asked or was in the air, and every vestige of embarrassment was gone. Daisy's face was smeared with tears, and when I came in she jumped up and began wiping at it with her handkerchief before a mirror. But Gatsby literally glowed. Without a word or a gesture of exultation, a new well-being radiated from him. "Oh, hello, old sport. I want you and Daisy to come over to my house. I'd like to show her around." Daisy went upstairs to wash her face while Gatsby and I waited on the lawn until she came out, the two rows of brass buttons on her dress gleaming in the sunlight. "That huge place there," she cried, pointing.
"Do you like it?"
"I love it, but I don't see how you live there all alone."
"I keep it always full of interesting people, night and day. People who do interesting things, celebrated people."
Inside, as we wandered through Marie Antoinette music rooms and restoration salons, I felt that there were guests concealed behind every couch and table, under orders to be breathlessly silent until we'd passed through. We went upstairs through period bedrooms swathed in rose and lavender silk, through dressing rooms and pool rooms and bathrooms with sunken baths. Finally, we came to Gatsby's own apartment. His bedroom was the simplest room of all, except where the dresser was garnished with a toilet set of pure dull gold. Daisy took the brush with delight and smoothed her hair, whereupon Gatsby began to laugh. He was consumed with wonder at her presence. He'd been full of the idea so long, now, in the reaction, he was running down like an overwound clock. Recovering himself, he opened for us two hulking cabinets which held his mast suits and dressing gowns and ties, and his shirts, stacked like bricks a dozen high. He took out a pile and began throwing them one by one before us. Shirts of sheer linen and thick silk and fine flannel, which lost their folds as they fell and covered the table in many-color disarray. While we admired, he brought more, and the soft, rich heap mounted higher. Suddenly, Daisy bent her head into the shirts and began to cry. "They're such beautiful shirts! I've never seen such beautiful shirts before!" As I watched him, his hand took hold of hers. They had forgotten me. I went out of the room and down the marble steps into the rain, leaving them there together.